ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय I've been speaking on Vishnu Sahasranama and will continue to do so now. The next name under discussion is Aprameya, which means one who is, name of Vishnu, which means one who is not subject to ascertainment by measurement or by any kind of evidence alone. Now, this is a very important name, and it's significant in the whole context of Sri Vishnu Sahasranama, in as much as by the various names of Vishnu, they describe his characteristics by which he may be known and he may be understood. But this name suggests that although all these characteristics, they describe him, they describe his qualities, but ultimately he cannot be put into a box, into any category, a mental box of our understanding. So this name is very similar, or conveys a similar meaning to that of achintya. And achintyatva, or the state of being beyond conscious formulation, is the cornerstone of Gaurīya Vaiṣṇava Siddhanta, or understanding. In fact, the very idea that we can measure him, miyate anaya iti maya, that is called maya, the attempt to measure him, is maya. This name, Aprameya, appears actually three times in Bhagavad Gita. One is in relation to the individual soul. This term, Aprameya, in relation to the individual soul, is significant inasmuch as the individual soul is also described as balasya shatabhagasya. If the tip of the hair is divided 100 times and 100 times again, shatadha kalpitasya cha jiva bhuta swarupo yam, it's said that the Shastra states that the dimension of the soul is 1/10,000th, the tip of a hair. But again, it said apramaya. So this indicates that saying that 1/10,000th size, the tip of a hair, is the size of the soul is to emphasize its sukshmatva, jiva bhutasu. It's the subtlety of the soul that is not actually measurable. So, and the word apramaya comes up twice in Bhagavad Gita, and also two more times. In chapter 11, in which Arjuna, being confronted with the Vishvarupam, the universal form of Krishna, twice in his prayers to Krishna, describes him as being apramaya. Prior to this, Arjuna thought that he knew Krishna. That Krishna is... What are the characteristics by which Krishna is understood, according to Arjuna? Well, he's the same age as me. He's the same height. He's the same varna, kshatriya. We are friends. We're in bodily strength, we're about the same. We're both darkish in complexion. So in this way, Arjuna thought that he knew Krishna, but then he saw Krishna expanded as the whole universe. And how are you going to measure the whole universe? That's the attempt of the scientists, but that's also impossible. And even if you could measure everything in the universe, you still couldn't measure Krishna. And actually, it's not possible to... Even this tiny one universe, it's not possible for any individual to empirically comprehend in its entirety. We see that various scientists, they study various disciplines. And so, someone may be expert in studying. Expert means they have more knowledge than others. Doesn't mean they know everything. So someone may be expert in studying minerals, the soil, rocks, geologists. Someone may be expert in studying light, waves. Someone may be expert in studying sound waves. Someone may be expert in studying the various species of living beings. And they can make statements which are considered scientific. But no one person can study the whole gamut of science and be able to personally measure everything or have an understanding of everything, of every aspect of science. So even to understand this universe, that is not possible for any one person. Maybe little bits and pieces of knowledge are put together or are ascertained or understood by individual persons. And we find that even in the study of matter, physicists, they're also stumped by the wave-particle dichotomy, so-called wave-particle dichotomy of that arises between quantum physics and classical physics. And it's a big problem for them, because the endeavor of science is to define everything exactly. But here, by this very name, Aprameya, it is understood that the idea that we can define everything exactly, miyate anaya iti maya, it's an illusion to think that we can study everything exactly and know everything exactly, the idea that everything is understandable in a linear, one-dimensional way. So that's a point about Krishna, and actually it extends to everything, that Krishna is multifaceted, and there's not a single way to understand him. In fact, every living being has an individual personal relationship with Krishna. And actually, even in our mundane relationships, we all relate to other people in different ways. Two people may both have the same friend, but their friendly relationship is not exactly the same, because each person is individual and different. So what to speak of Krishna, whose personality is unlimitedly multifaceted? Now, the name Aprameya literally cannot measure. There's science has come up with so many ways to measure. We can measure the length, bring a ruler. How tall is Krishna? How fat is Krishna? How thin is Krishna? Krishna is called Krishna, means dark complexion. That's one meaning of the word Krishna. So how dark is he? Well, there's no measuring. You can't compare him. You see, generally we say South Indians are of dark, Tamils are of darker complexion. But Krishna's blackness is not like ordinary blackness. It's reported among the statements of Srila Prabhupada that one of his disciples, who was a Negro, had made a statement like that, that Krishna is also black. And Prabhupada said to him, but not like you. You see? Krishna doesn't, we can't put him into any mundane category. Then, there's so many measuring instruments, microscopes for measuring the microcosmically, telescopes for attempting to gauge macroscopically, hygrometers, and all kinds of different instruments for measuring. The attempt of modern science is to measure everything, ascertain its properties, and then utilize that, as they say, in the service of mankind, which means for their sense gratification. If you take away all the high-sounding statements, the study of science is to make more and more facilities, ultimately, for sense gratification. So, Krishna is not measurable. Generally, it's understood among Vaishnavas that there are various sources of pramana. We have the word here, aprameya. Prameya means that which is subject to, that which is the object of pramana. Pramana is translated as evidence or means of ascertainment. As usual, the English words are inadequate to convey the concepts of the Vedic language, but evidence is the standard word used to translate pramana. And prameya is that which is ascertained by pramana. And Krishna is aprameya. The various sources of pramana are sensory perception. There are many, but the main ones are sensory perception, pratyaksha. Now Krishna, he cannot be seen by mundane eyes. Pratyaksha anuman, which means guesswork, hypothesis based on pratyaksha. But anuman is based on pratyaksha, and if anuman cannot go where pratyaksha doesn't go. It's supposed to take us beyond pratyaksha, but ultimately it's based on pratyaksha. Just like common example of anuman, or standard example of anuman, is if we see smoke on a mountain, we can presume that there must be fire. But to presume that there is fire means that one must have seen fire producing smoke previously. It's based on previous pratyaksha. And as pratyaksha is faulty, is subject to faults or to mistaken perception, so is anuman. For instance, one may see smoke on a mountain and presume that there is or was a fire there, but actually it's not smoke at all. It may be the spray from a waterfall, which we mistake to be smoke. So it may be just fully wrong. So pratyaksha and anuman are, although they have some conventional usage, no doubt, we can't say that they're completely useless. We use them all the time in the conventional world. But to ascertain the nature of we use them all the time, but at the same time, we should recognize they're faulty. They have their limitations, because brahm pramad vipralipsa karana patav. Living beings are subject to make mistakes, to be illusioned, to have imperfect senses, and even though we perceive something correctly, we may want to present it as something else to cheat others, or even to cheat ourselves. So even to ascertain the nature of the material, pratyaksha and anuman are imperfect, and what to speak, kimuta, what to speak of the transcendent. What to speak of Bhagavan, who ekangshena stito jagat, with just a particle of his potency, he produces this whole material existence. And then who is he? How can we measure him? So the accepted pramana for understanding Bhagavan is Shastra Praman, or specifically Shruti Praman. We can understand him by hearing from proper source, specifically the Vedic literature. But here, the commentator here, Parashara Bhatta, he said, apramaya means no praman is sufficient to reveal him. So he takes this to mean that even Shruti Praman, that also does not reveal him. He is as he is. He reveals himself to those he wants to reveal himself to. And although he generally does so through Shastra, but even the ability to understand Shastra comes from him. So we find many people who study Shastra, but they don't understand Krishna. They don't find Krishna. So it's not that Shruti, certainly Shruti is Pramana, but the ability to comprehend at whatever tiny level we can, to comprehend Bhagavan, that is not subject to our own our own abilities to ascertain. Ultimately, it's a gift from him. So this is a very important point, that if we think, and now we're studying Vishnu Sahasranam, then we learn about his different qualities that make him Bhagavan, not that he's made into Bhagavan, but that the different qualities and characteristics by which he is Bhagavan, and by which we can understand Vishnu to be Bhagavan. So we understand that he is characteristics are described. He is yajna, he is fixed, he is the controller of the senses. So many names are there. He is very beautiful, he is the giver of liberation, he appears in the form of man-lion, he is the origin of the creation. So many characteristics are there. But ultimately, to understand him is only by his mercy. So this name, Apramaya, does not uphold the impersonalist stance that because he is non-measurable or non-ascertainable, that ultimately he's not a person, he doesn't have form, and he's just totally inconceivable in all respects. So this is again a dichotomy. Is he understandable or is he not understandable? Both. He's understandable to the extent that he allows us to understand him, but ultimately it's not all about understanding anyway. It is about the ultimate quest is not to understand him, measure him, put a label, just like in there are entomologists who collect different species of insects and they dry them and put them in a box with a label and put some Latin name. And that's it. We discovered a new species of butterfly. We captured and put in the museum. And now you can go and see the butterfly. So we cannot capture Krishna and put him in the box of our mind, because our mind is not big enough to accommodate him. But he can be captured by love. That is the whole point to be understood. It is not reciting Vishnu Sahasranam is not an attempt to exhibit our mastery over studying a subject. Someone is an expert in studying insects. Someone is an expert in studying history. Someone is an expert in studying geology. And we think, now I've become an expert in studying Vishnu. No. Simply we can fold our hands. Pranamya shirasa devam. We can simply hold our hands to our head and pray to him for his mercy. Now, what to speak of us? We are very tiny little beings. But even Brahma and Shiva, whose sense perception and intelligence far exceeds ours, even they cannot measure him. The great example is that of Brahma in stealing the cowherd boys and calves. Thought that he could measure the he thought that he could ascertain the potency of Krishna. And he later admitted his inability. Lord Shiva, who is although known as the son of Lord Brahma, he is categorically far superior to Lord Brahma. He thought that he was beyond being bewildered by Vishnu Maya, which, well, that's generally true. Vishnu Maya is generally manifest as his wife, who he's not bewildered by. She offers material enjoyment to everyone, but Lord Shiva is not interested in material enjoyment. But Lord Shiva, he became bewildered by the manifestation of Mohini, Vishnu's female form. And he was very satisfied afterward. Not that he was in competition with Vishnu. But he was very satisfied to accept his situation of subordination to Vishnu. That even he cannot measure in the sense that a materialistic scientist wants to measure for the sake of controlling or dominating Vishnu. So, he is infinite and infinitesimal. Both. Neither can we measure the extent of his vastness, nor if we go smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller and try to examine in the most minute way, we still cannot find any situation in which there is not Vishnu. Or we cannot go so small, we cannot study or find anything so small that Vishnu cannot enter there. He is infinitesimal and infinite, and everything in between. And he's outside all of those categories altogether, because our measuring ability stretches from infinitesimal to infinite, but that's only our measuring ability. He has dimensions. His consciousness does not move in a strictly linear way as ours does. And this is the important point to understand. This is the whole mistake of so-called science in the West, or the whole outlook of Western civilization, is to try to understand everything, to categorize everything in a very methodical way. But reality, they've just presumed that reality is measurable in all respects and is methodical in all respect, in a way that we can understand. So certainly the universe, as we perceive it, is methodical in many ways. But there are many things, and it's always going to be like that. There is always going to be so many things we can't understand. Even a slight wave band of reality, we can hardly, that which we can perceive, or that which we can create instruments to perceive, even then we can't understand hardly anything about this universe. And what to speak of He who creates, maintains, and destroys these universes with only a slight touch of His energy. And He doesn't become expended by doing so. He doesn't lose anything in doing so. He doesn't lose any energy. He doesn't become tired. So the whole idea that we have to measure everything and understand everything is in itself is a great illusion. And Vishnu is completely beyond such endeavors. It's just laughable, the idea that we can do so, should do so. It's laughable. Just like Krishna, he laughed at Brahma. Brahma thought, yes, now I can, now we shall see what is the power of Krishna. And Brahma, who is so powerful and so knowledgeable about everything in the universe, found himself completely defeated by Krishna. Now, examples of Krishna's, of Vishnu's immeasurability. Well, obvious example is Matsya Avatar. How big is he? He came in the palm of Satyavrata Muni, who put him in a pot, big pot, and then the pot, then Matsya's can't fit in the pot because he became bigger immediately. So then Satyavrata put him in a pond, and his form expanded again, so the pond is too small for him. Then Satyavrata put him in a big lake, and even that little fish who had just been in his hand and appeared to be helpless and was asking Satyavrata for shelter, he's now expanded to the size of a lake. And then he understood, oh, okay, this is the Supreme Lord who I'm worshipping. Then he went to the sea, appeared in the ocean. Another example is Vamana Dev. Bali Maharaj was saying, you can measure 3 steps of land. He wanted to take 3 steps of land by the measurement of his step. That much land that he could take. But who will measure his step. With one step he covered the lower worlds, with one step he could have covered the upper and the lower worlds. With one step he could have taken over all the universes. So the idea that Bali Maharaj, not knowing that this Vamana was Vishnu, he took him to be an ordinary person whose footstep, you can estimate his footstep. How much is the footstep of a young child? How much land can he cover? Not very much. So there's another example. Immeasurable. We can't even measure how big is half the universe. We can't imagine. But he covered in one footstep. Now another example is Yashoda seeing the universe within the mouth of Krishna. Now how is that possible? Because the mouth of Krishna, he's a baby, so how, if he opens it wide, it may be 5 centimeters in diameter. Now, how does the whole, and of course his mouth, there's some area in there, but the total volume of his mouth would be less, if you take from the tonsils to the lips, and from the upper palate to the root of the tongue, then for a little baby, how much is it going to be? Probably not more than half a liter. Definitely not more than 1 liter capacity. Then how does the whole universe fit in there? It's possible because everything's possible for Krishna. You say the whole universe, Mount Everest is in there. If you take Mount Everest, of course, in relation to the whole Earth planet, Mount Everest is not very big. It only occupies a tiny amount. But if you take Mount Everest in relation to the size of a baby's mouth, you're never going to be able to fit it inside. It's a ludicrous proposition to try to fit Mount Everest into the mouth of a baby, or even into the mouth of a crocodile. A crocodile has a very big mouth. Don't try to measure it. You might get in trouble. He might measure you instead. So how did not only this Earth planet with its millions of mountains and oceans, but the whole universe fit within the mouth of Krishna? Can anyone explain this? Any suggestions? Anyone like to offer any suggestions how the whole universe fits into Krishna's mouth? No, no one has any idea. That's because he's Krishna. And you can't understand it. And that he's immeasurable. What is the explanation? There is no explanation other than that he is Vishnu. He is Bhagavan. He's Aprameya. He's not subject to your science.
And science says, well, that's not possible.
Yeah, that's true. It's not possible. That's why he's Bhagavan. That's why we worship him.
There's no God.
Okay. You don't believe in God? Up to you.
It's not possible there's any God.
It's up to you. You believe what you like. Up to you. But your disbelief in your a priori belief that we can only accept that which we can measure doesn't mean that it's true. There's this idea that, well, you see, everything has to be explained by science. And the idea that the whole universe can fit into the mouth of Krishna, who we don't even believe existed anyway, it's just some Indian tribal folk stories. So that's not very important. We should study the life of Einstein and Stephen Hawking, and these are the really important people who have made the real contributions to science, and it's, you see, and it's just poppycock to see silly stories. How can adult, educated people believe that Mother Yashoda saw the whole universe within the mouth of Krishna? Or that it was actually there? You say she might have seen it, she might have been given some drugs to take by which she was hallucinating. So they just presume, without any evidence, there's no way to prove this, but they just presume that everything must be measurable. Why? 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 That they cannot say, well, it's science. It's not science at all to make such an assumption. It's just a blind faith in your own methodology, that's all. No, it's not, it's science. How do you say blind faith? Blind faith, that's for religion. No, your so-called science is based on the blind faith that everything should be measurable, categorizable. Why? It's simply blind faith. That's all. And we accept it to be true because everyone says so, and they think you're stupid if you don't accept it to be true. But why? If you examine it, there's no reasonable basis or intelligent basis by which reality should conform to our demand that every aspect of it should be measurable and intelligible. Why should it be so? Because we think it should be, or we want it to be. So you can just kick science and into the waste bin and leave it there, because it's based on false assumptions, which they present as if they are axioms, as if they just must be true, because we all believe it, and we are scientists, and we all have PhDs. But it's like a bunch of children. They get together and play, and if one of them says, well, you know, now we're going to have a cricket match, just kids playing in the street. So your name is Sachin Tendulkar, and your name is, say the name, Dhoni, and your name is Muhammad Kaif, and your name. So they can play among themselves and pretend among themselves that they are the Indian national cricket team, but, and they may get so much into it that they really believe it, but after all, it's just a group of children playing. So the scientists may say among themselves that, you see, we only accept that which is measured. And Einstein says so, and Stephen Hawking says so, and Newton says so. But it's just like that. It's a group of children who get together and they pretend that they are something which they are not. And according, you see, and you can say it was a great game, and Sachin almost got a century, and but it's just they've made, it's just according to their own imagination. That's all. So they get together, and they make these so-called scientific laws, or scientific methodology, but it's just based on they, because they say it, they believe it to be true. And it's Newton said, Einstein said, this one said, that one said. But then what's the basis? What is the actual basis of their supposition that reality is only ascertainable if we can ascertain it? But according to our sensual ability, if we can measure it, if we can categorize it. And they're so much fixated in this idea that they go to such absurdities as saying, well, consciousness is just, it's just interaction of various chemicals. Although there's absolutely no evidence whatsoever. But because consciousness actually transcends, it's not measurable by any of their instruments. Therefore, they say, well, some of them say that it's produced by chemical interactions in the brain, and although there's absolutely no evidence whatsoever for that, or they say that it doesn't exist at all. There's no such thing as consciousness. So how then can we know if Krishna is not ascertainable by sensory perception, by hypothesis, or even by Shruti, or by the statements of Shastra? Then how is he to be understood at all? And the answer, yes, he reveals himself. Atashri Krishna Namadi Nabhaved Grahyam Indriyai Sivan Mukhe. What is that? Sivan Mukhe? Hijivada. Swayam Eva Spurateva. There's another I want to tie it in with Hrishikesh, which is the next word. But I was thinking of that. Yeah. So Krishna, he's not ascertainable by our efforts, but when he wants to reveal himself to us, he can do. And what is that? How is that possible? Sarabho padhivi nirmuktam tatparatvena nirmalam hrishikena hrishikesha sevanam bhakti ruchate. By bhakti. Sevan mukhe hi jiva. Sevan mukh means bhakti. To be seva, to be inclined to serve Krishna means bhakti. Sevan mukhe hi jivado swayameva spuratyava. So when we go beyond these mundane designations, and our consciousness is purified, and we attempt to serve the master of the senses, Hrishikesh. Utilize. This is the process to experience Krishna. Ultimately, everything is to be experienced. Ultimately, even in the mundane sphere, ultimately everything comes down to experience. When we say, I have measured, this earthworm is 11 centimeters long. What does that mean, 11 centimeters? When we say 11 centimeters, that means that If I say to you, I measured an earthworm, how long it was? It was 11 centimeters long. Then in your mind, you have an idea, 11 centimeters. Okay, it's about that long. So that all depends on experience. It is on consciousness. The consciousness is the arena in which every individual is existence. Every individual, everything they do, everything is in the world of experience. If we say science, just measuring. But ultimately, what is that measuring? It's not so cold and dry and hot. Everything is grounded in consciousness. So cold and dry and hard, that is the world of science. And of impersonalism. And bhakti is the world of bliss. Krishna, we say aprameya, we don't try to measure him. We simply try to love him. That's all. We appreciate his qualities and we love him. How tall is Krishna? How fat is Krishna? How black is Krishna? This doesn't matter. How sweet is Krishna? How kind is Krishna? How charming is his smile and his glance? How charming is the sound of his flute? How attractive is it to dance with Krishna? How we must make very nice food to offer Krishna so that he will be pleased. This is the bhakti is the world of love, not of measurement. Cold, hard, dry measurement. The scientist with a white, jacket, this long coat, scientist's coat, they're measuring, trying to understand, lost in the world of figures and theorems, and Krishna is dancing. So better join Krishna in his dancing, that's all. You can become an engineer and attempt to manipulate a tiny portion of the material energy. But better is to dance with Krishna. That's all. See, even in the mundane sphere, how many people like to watch movies that show scientific discovery? Even then they have to make it exciting with lots of actual scientific discovery. If they show what it is, it's boring like anything. They have to do experiment over and over again. Boring. But the movies means there's singing and dancing and laughing. And sometimes there's crying also. That's in the material world. But in the spiritual world, simply, Sugita Narchane Shabashaki Gane Tushichi Tushiche Jugala Dhane. The gopis are singing and dancing and pleasing Radha and Krishna. So Radha and Krishna's pastime, simply joyful. We're not going to scratch our heads and try to measure. Of course, some measurement may be there. We have to make clothes for the deities. We have to measure. But Krishna may also You make the clothes and then Krishna may get fatter. It's not that deities, they're fixed. You think they're stone? Well, maybe they are stone, but not like ordinary stone. Sometimes that happens. The deity that we all saw in London so many years ago, it's just a blip in time. How deities, actually, they weren't being fed very nicely. Then the new leader came and said, okay, now we're going to feed them nicely. Huge, starting Mangalati, 108 big sweets. And then throughout the day. And within 2 weeks, they had to make all new sets of clothes because everyone could see Krishna's fatter. You can see the old photos also. Krishna became fat because he was eating nicely. So he may agree to be measured out of kindness to his devotees. He appears as the deity so that we can serve him. As Srila Prabhupada said, if he appeared as the universal form, how would you dress him? All the cloth factories in the world would be exhausted, and still you wouldn't finish dressing him. So he kindly appears. Just Radha, Krishna, you can dress them very nicely. But if he was to appear, just like Krishna expands himself in the Rasa Leela, into so many forms, then how many Krishnas can you dress? Same Krishna, but Swayam Prakash, he expands himself in so many forms. And how many Krishnas can you relate to? One gopi, one Krishna. Same Krishna, but in many forms. And each gopi is thinking, this is Krishna with me only. My Krishna. Everyone thinks my Krishna. How many Krishnas were there in Dwaraka? In the palace, when he was in the palace, he would be with each queen in 16,108 forms. And then every morning when he would go to the court, all the forms would merge into one. How many Krishnas were there? Were there one or 16,108? If you go, just like Narada went from palace to palace, you'll find there are 16,108 forms of Krishna. But then, they all become one. So how many Krishnas? One or 16,108? One! It's one Krishna. But then he's manifest in so many forms. He's manifest inside each atom, in the heart of every living being. So, anoraniyan mahato mahiya. He's infinite, infinitely big, infinitely small, and completely beyond our power to understand. He is to be experienced by divine senses. He is not by the mundane senses, by the mundane abilities, he cannot be measured. He is to be loved, not measured. Still, some element of comparison is there. We say, Krishna is stronger than everyone else put together. So that's some kind of comparison. But you cannot measure his strength. All right, so I'll finish there. That's one name. 1 hour, one name. Then we have to go 1,000 hours. But actually, if we're to explain any name, then even one name you can take 1,000 hours. Because you can't measure. You can't, the more you try to measure, the more you find there's further to go. Like Mother Yashoda, she brought some string. This should be enough to tie up Krishna. Oh, it's not enough. Okay, let me bring some more. That's not enough. And she brought some more. That's still not enough. How much rope is required to tie up Krishna? No amount of rope. You can bring all the rope in the universe, you can't tie him up. But eventually Krishna is tied up by the prayarasanaya, by the rope of love. That is the only rope that can tie him up. So don't measure, just love him. That's better. So any question about this in particular? This subject? Yeah. Adhoksaja, that's already one name, yeah. Yeah. Similar import, yeah. Adhoksaja, Aprameya, Achintya. All these names, they convey the inability of the tiny jiva to understand or comprehend the greatness and the infinity of Bhagavan. So, Hare Krishna. Shall we have a kirtan? You have a question? Yeah. Just pass the mic back then. That microphone is meant for that purpose.
We are forced to believe the scientists.
You're forced to believe the scientists. That's, well, you're not forced. That's why Prabhupada gave us his Life Comes From Life talks and showed us that we're not forced to believe what the scientists think. There's a completely different way of looking at reality. We don't have to accept what the so-called scientists say. We don't have to accept their paradigm of reality. The common man is forced to believe, yeah, then he should get Prabhupada's books and see that there's another way of seeing. They don't even think. The common man doesn't even think that there's any other way of perceiving reality. So Srila Prabhupada's books are paradigm shifting. Many useful things they have made, like an aeroplane. What is it useful for? You give me an example of the scientists have created something useful. An example is an aeroplane. What is it useful for? How is the aeroplane useful? For traveling. What is the utility of traveling? You can pass stool in one place, you can pass stool in another place. You can pass stool in the airplane too. What is the value actually of traveling? You give another example, tube light. What is the value of the tube light? Or does the question sound stupid to you? Is it not obvious? The tube light gives light. So how does that benefit you? What is the benefit actually? You can study. You can study, you can dance, you can cook, you can sit and watch your toenails grow. There are so many things you can do thanks to having tube lights. But still you have to suffer birth, death, old age and disease. So what is the value, actually, of tube lights and airplanes and spectacles and hair-cutting saloons and umbrellas and mixies and reinforced concrete buildings? What is the value if you have to suffer birth, death, old age and disease? By promoting that this is of value, they're actually, by promoting that all these things are of value and it's improved our life, the materialists are actually doing a disservice to humanity. They're saying, we've done such great service to humanity by having tube lights and airplanes. But it's actually a disservice to humanity by promoting that life is better with all these things, when we still have to suffer birth, death, old age and disease. They're diverting our attention away from the really important questions or the really important issues of life, which are how to get free from birth, death, old age and disease. So we can use these things in Krishna's service, as we are doing now, with microphones and tube lights and halogen lamps. So we can use that in Krishna's service, but it's not inherently of any value, as it is advertised to be, that the world is better thanks to all these things. There's intrinsically, you cannot make the world a better place, because it is intrinsically a place of suffering. Spirituality is the
eye of science. Science don't know where to go, but spirituality can lead it to the destination. For example, previously there used to be lots of diseases which are extinct because of the knowledge of science. So, how can we go to the destination?
Many diseases are extinguished today thanks to science. And many new diseases are increased today thanks to science. Just like cancer was not common, but thanks to pesticides in food and other contributions of the scientists, cancer is common. The idea that science is eradicating disease is just another illusory concept. There's so many hospitals. So where's the eradication of disease? They so-called finish off one disease, and then by the power of Maya, new diseases, AIDS. There was no AIDS. Now that has come. So the idea that we are conquering over disease is just propaganda. It's completely bogus. You're not conquering over disease. Completely bogus. And people are stupid enough to believe it. They said they'd conquered tuberculosis, but they haven't. Antibiotics are now largely useless due to resistance. So don't believe all this bogus propaganda that the science is making the world a better place. If there's birth, death, old age and disease, what is the meaning of making it a better place? If every day you... Science, maybe rather than a person. If every day you are beaten with 10 lashes of a whip, and someone says, okay, but from now on, you can choose whatever music you like best to listen to while you're being lashed. It's better. The world is a better place. You can choose your favorite music as you're being, as tremendous pain is meted out to you. Is it really better? So this so-called civilization, it is most foolish, and because it neglects the real problems, which everyone can see. There is old age, disease, death, and then birth. And it's rascaldom, because they promote that actually we're making the world a better place, when the same problems are there. And actually there are so many more problems also. I mean, even if you don't think of birth, death, old age, and disease, which you should do, but even from a totally mundane perspective, the world in so many ways is much worse than it was before the advent of science, or what they call science. So, Hare Krishna.